So today we're going to do a little update on opportunity zones. And so with me, I have Kyla Arisman, who's an attorney here at McLaw and also heads our opportunity zone reviews, as well as Alan Lincoln, who heads our real estate underwriting here at McLaw. So without further ado, let's just get into it. I want to try to keep them at about 30 minutes at best I can, just so you guys know exactly what you're getting into and you got other things to do as well. So I'm going to start with a few questions to Kyla, and then I'll turn it over to Alan and ask him a couple, and I'm sure they'll feed off each other once we start. So let's just start with a basic question, Kyla. Are there any positives right now for OZ funds, given that there's this COVID-19 pandemic that's kind of been around now for about 10 weeks here in the United States?
You know, they actually do have some upsides from the pandemic. First, given OZ funds' longer investment horizon, they can weather the storm, so to speak, and investors aren't looking for that quick, like, five-year exit that they might be looking for in a normal real estate fund. And then in addition, although here at McLaw, we do have some general concerns with blind pool OZ funds, those funds that are sitting on uninvested capital right now might be able to find some really good deals on real estate in the coming months, be that from a sponsor who couldn't make a development deal work or just someone looking to unload that real estate.
Okay, great. So now that we've added a couple more individuals to our little meeting here, let's go into something important, and that's legislative updates. So I know you've discussed, you've been on some panels talking about opportunity zones and kind of what's been down the pike and what you've kind of been, but why don't you give an update on anything that's basically been taking place since, maybe in the last few months, since the last time you've kind of been on a panel?
There's actually been a lot this past month, so it's going to be a little bit of a lengthy answer. And there's several items I want to go over, including IRS notice 20-23, a letter that was authored by Senator Tim Scott to the Treasury, as well as HR 6529. So starting with IRS notice 20-23, this notice includes relief with respect to specified time-sensitive actions, which includes that 180-day investment period of capital gains into opportunity funds. The notice indicates that if the deadline to invest the capital gain dollars into an opportunity fund was on or after April 1st of this year and before July 15th of this year, then the taxpayer's deadline is going to be automatically extended to July 15th of this year. So for some investors, that could close to double, well, not double, but give them a couple more months to get that money into an OZ fund and get those tax benefits. Moving on to Senator Tim Scott's letter to the Treasury. On May 4th, Senator Scott of South Carolina, who was one of the authors of the original Opportunity Zone legislation, along with eight of his fellow Republican senators, sent a letter to the Department of the Treasury that had about a dozen requests to modify certain OZ rules. I'm only going to go over some of the big ones. First, they're requesting to give taxpayers more time to invest capital gains into an opportunity fund, specifically that 180-day investment period for a taxpayer's sale or exchange of capital gains property to be contributed to an opportunity fund should be extended by 3 months for all 180-day investment periods with respect to capital gains for which the 180-day period would have ended on or after March 13th of this year and on or before December 31st of this year. Second, they're requesting the foregoance of penalties under the 90% asset test if the failure to meet the test was the result of the COVID-19 pandemic. They are also requesting that the Treasury Department should clarify that the 24-month extension of the working capital safe harbor that's available to OZ businesses located within a federally declared disaster automatically applies to all OZ businesses nationwide under the President's Emergency Declaration for the COVID-19 pandemic. This period should begin on March 13th, 2020, and extend until the earlier of the emergency declaration or the period requested by the taxpayer and available under the regulations. And this extension should also apply to the maximum 62-month period for working capital safe harbors, which would give a total of 86 months where appropriate. Fourth, the letter is requesting that Treasury should also make clear that the relief available in the regulations for opportunity funds when disaster strikes is available in the wake of this pandemic. Specifically, they want the Treasury to clarify that the 12-month extension available to OZ funds to reinvest proceeds from the sale, disposition, or return of capital from OZ property when reinvestment plans are delayed due to a federally declared disaster should automatically apply to all OZ funds nationwide under that emergency declaration that President Trump signed regarding the COVID-19 pandemic. Fifth, the letter is also requesting that the Treasury provide a 12-month extension to the 30-month substantial improvement period that's allotted for OZ property that is undergoing or expected to begin or complete its substantial improvement period for 2020. And finally, the letter's also suggesting that opportunity funds be provided with an additional cure period equal to 6 months for a non-compliant trade or business if that trade or business can demonstrate that it lost its qualification due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Keep in mind that these are just recommendations from the senators to the Treasury at this point. Unless and until the Treasury actually adopts some or all of these into the OZ rules that they've put out, these recommendations can't be relied on by funds or investors. So moving on to HR 6529, this bill was
Hey, Kyla,
sponsored-
before you go on,
yeah.
How long might that take?
Well, how long did we wait for Treasury regulation?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, historically, it's been a really slow-moving process.
Right. So the Treasury regs, I mean, it was a painful wait. So not super high hopes for anything getting done super quickly by them. But we still need to know that it's out there. So, moving on to HR 6529, this bill was sponsored by Representative John Curtis. He's a Republican from Utah, and co-sponsored by Henry Queller, who's a Democrat from Texas. The bill is called the COVID-19 Impacted Small Business Opportunity Zone Act, and it was introduced a month ago today on April 21st. This act would change the existing OZ legislation in four areas. First, there would be a whole new category of qualified OZ businesses in which OZ funds can invest. They would be called qualified small businesses. Qualified small businesses are defined as any trade or business with annual gross receipts under $1 million, which have experienced some certain broadly defined adverse effects as a result of the spread of or the public's or any government's response to COVID-19. In addition, there's no location requirement for qualified small businesses, meaning they do not have to be located in an opportunity zone for opportunity funds to be allowed to invest in them. Qualified small businesses would only be eligible for opportunity fund investments for 1 year after the date of the passage of the bill, which is designed to get money flowing to these businesses quickly. The next thing this bill would do is freeze the capital gains rate on opportunity fund investments. The tax rate on deferred gains invested in a QO fund would be set at the capital gains rate for the tax year in which the investment is made. Currently, the law requires that deferred gains be included in income no later than 2026, and the taxes paid on them will be at the capital gains rate then applicable, which is a risk factor that MCLAW notes in all of our opportunity fund opinions. So this would give the investor some certainty as to what that tax bill is going to be.
Just to pause on that, that'd be a huge change. I mean, that's
for
that's,
sure.
We consider that a big deal.
Yeah, that's massive. So the third thing this bill would do is provide an extension of the gain deferral and basis bumps that currently end on December 31st, 2026. As currently written, the 7-year basis adjustment is no longer available because this incentive sunsets at the end of 2026. So for investments made starting this year, the OZ legislation gives investors at most a 10% basis adjustment for investments that are held for more than 5 years by that 2026 date. So this bill would defer the outside inclusion date of deferred gains beyond December 31st, 2026 to any date that is 7 years after the day on which the investment is acquired. This allows new investors who invest after the enactment of this bill to enjoy all of the potential tax benefits that were originally available under the OZ Act, including the full 15% basis step up and a deferral for a full 7 tax years. The final thing this bill would do is also allow non-capital gains investments to be eligible for the main tax benefit of OZ funds. The OZ legislation currently rewards only taxpayers who invest capital gains, and a non-capital gain cash investment, while permitted, does not enjoy any of the tax benefits. This bill would provide that non-capital gain dollars would now be eligible for that main tax incentive, which is the ability to exclude any new gain on OZ investments that are held for at least 10 years.
Hey, Kyla, do we have any idea what are the adverse effects and what do they have to prove in order to qualify for this? I mean, is it defined, you know, or is it like everything else they do and they don't really give you the defined or a definitive answer?
So it's not defined in the bill, and it would be one of those things that if this bill is passed, then it would have to go to the Treasury to promulgate further regulations.
So is this, I mean, do you think it's more, and Alan, same for you on this, I mean, is this more of something that, like maybe a startup company would be a good opportunity to invest in a startup company that may not have a lot of capital, might have an opportunity to, and it could be a, you know, medical device company or something. I don't know. That's in those stages where they're looking for capital. I mean, they can't be making more than $1 million in gross revenue, which kind of cuts into it a little bit. I mean, they do have to be relatively small and select businesses. And so, you know, what kind of investment are people going to put into to a small business that's got a, you know, $500,000 of gross revenues? I mean, we talk about like $25,000 or $50,000 loan. I mean, it seems,
you know,
like
one thing I thought is that a business owner could put further capital into their own business and basically set it up as like a private OZ fund and just get tax benefits on their own money.
Right, or continues investment by other partners in the business. I mean, say you had a restaurant supply company and you had 5 partners, 2 of which were silent. It encourages those partners to add additional capital at the time in which they otherwise would be looking to pull out, or they'd otherwise be looking to, I mean, the idea is to prop up failing businesses. So these businesses are on the fence and they're just looking for people. It most likely impacts people who are already invested in the business, or, you know, friends, family, that kind of money.
Yeah, okay. So maybe that provision's not super applicable for our purposes, but, you know, those tax provisions and potential extension of some of those deadlines, that could be huge in our industry.
Okay, I'm going to throw
You're right, David. It's a low threshold.
It is.
It's a low threshold.
Very low. Kyle, I'm going to combine 2 questions. Give me some additional risk factors that need to be considered now that this, you know, the pandemic's currently going on, and then have you seen any, you know, general structural or changes you've seen in how people are structuring OZ funds?
So as far as risk factors, not all of the OZ funds we had looked at were intending to do a tax distribution to their investors in 2027 to cover taxes on the originally deferred capital gains. But for those that were, it's going to be far more challenging for them to have the necessary NOI for a refinance, especially some of those hardest hit industries like hospitality or maybe a Class A multifamily. Another risk factor to think about is construction delays. Best case scenario, projects in states that reopened quickly or never fully closed to begin with might only have short delays or continue on target. However, when you look at a state like California, which on its own has over $700 million of planned OZ projects, according to some figures we got from Novogradac, and is already a notoriously difficult state to get your needed permitting and zoning done in timely fashion, without some sort of legislative relief, there's a risk that projects in states like that are not going to be anywhere near meeting that 30-month development timeline that's required for OZ funds.
On that regard, Kyle, I was on a call today where the managing director of real estate investment banking at Morgan Stanley thought that the hardest hit area of lending was going to be in construction lending over the next 6 months or whatever. So that does pose exactly what you mentioned, but it's another individual, you know, deep in the weeds of lending that sees that as an area of concern, at least trying to get those things funded.
Right. I mean, construction delays were already a risk factor we talked about. And so this just kind of multiplies it even more.
Sure. And how about any structural OZ change you've seen in recent opportunities you've looked at?
Yeah, we're beginning to see a little bit more variety in some of the structuring that's happening. For example, just recently, a client brought to our attention a new publicly traded OZ fund that has no minimum investment, no accredited investor requirement, and no lockup period. And when you're seeing new structures like these, it's going to bring their own concerns. So this fund, for example, if there's no accredited investor requirement, you really question the suitability of this even more complicated investment than the average alternative for investors who arguably are not super sophisticated. And then secondly, if there's no requirement to stay in the fund for the 10-year term, let's say 8-9 years from now, we have another pandemic or just a general recession and a large number of investors want to withdraw in a short time frame, how's that OZ fund going to pay all those withdrawals without selling off assets? Overall, we're continuing to see new funds come to market, and those that were already fundraising, they're continuing to move forward with developing to the best of their ability. So it should be an interesting year as far as structuring and seeing how everything shakes out.
Awesome. Thank you, Kyle. I'm going to switch sides and go over to Alan and look at it more from the real estate underwriting or financing side. First question, Alan, from that finance or underwriting standpoint, how have the recent COVID-19 developments had an impact on how you see these investments playing out, or is it too early to know?
Well, David, I think for the most part, these are assets that are still under construction. And as Kyla mentioned, construction delays notwithstanding, you know, they're still in process. Even if a census tract was designated as an opportunity zone back in December of 2017, the deal was organized, say it got funded in the first part of 2018. Development is taking, let's say, 9 to 12 months to entitle and plan the development, develop a full set of plans. And then you're talking 18 to 24 months worth of construction. So when you lay all that out, at the best case scenario, these deals are completing in late 2020, but more than likely 2021. I say that from a positive standpoint. They're still under construction, so they aren't economically impacted at the current moment. If for example, I mean, everybody knows the hospitality industry has been hit hard, and I've heard vacancy figures like, you know, it's dropped to 40% or 40 occupancy figures, like it's 40% occupied, even in key travel areas at peak times. You know, when you think about those kind of assets, the time that they're most impacted is now, not after this is over, or we'll see. But if something is still under construction right now, it may be in the best place to recover. It may be, you still have time to recover. The construction financing was already locked in. The construction's already arguably at a fixed price with the contractor. Barring some material shortages, I'm saying that being under construction is probably still a good thing. If anything, the developments that are hurt are the ones that are coming to market late in the cycle, and that's just due to lending. We talked about that with Kyla a second ago, too. Lenders in all sectors have pulled back, but particularly the construction lenders, those are happening at the local bank level. It's the, you know, First National Bank of Omaha or, you know, Fifth Third Bank of Indianapolis. It's the local banking level. It's not the big nationals that are playing in those. And those local banks are the first ones that pull back when something like this happens. And so that financing, if the financing was already in place, the development stays on the same path. Architects are working, engineers are working. All the consultants are busy putting together drawings and planning this thing out, or they're under construction. But if they're in that early stage where they're still looking for money, those are the deals that are probably hurt by what's going on right now.
Okay. Thank you, Alan. A few weeks ago, we kind of went through, you know, the real estate food groups and talked about underwriting standards and how you've changed things given that there's obviously going to be some likely change in every asset class. Some get hit a little bit harder than others, but now we're talking about this asset class specific to opportunity zones. There might be some specific underwriting issues that you see, or anything specific. There might be some specific problems or new issues that are developing based on what's going on right now. What do you kind of see going on in the opportunity zone investment platform?
Well, you know, David, you mentioned a call that you were on earlier. I'm kind of like you. I spend most of my days now listening to calls from investment firms, or from whether it's REIS or CB Richard Ellis or JLL, focused on the real estate side and just trying to understand what's happening. And the message that I would sum up in 30 seconds or less from all of those calls would be that nobody has any data yet to prove out what is going on. There's some very early data from apartments about who's paying and who isn't paying, but very little data about vacancy and rental rates. And on the hospitality front, same thing. We're getting data that's coming in, but it's hit or miss. Some markets are very much better than others. So in general, I think it's just too early to say what's happening to any asset class. We're speculating at best. And 4 weeks ago, I was doing exactly that when we were talking on the phone. We were just kind of talking through some early ideas about how things could be impacted, or what we thought their impact would be. But the interesting thing about these opportunity zones is a lot of them are mixed use developments. So they kind of carry a natural insulator against any one particular asset class. As I think back about the transactions we've looked at a lot of multifamily and hospitality combinations, or a self-storage parking combination, or a retail and office combination. So there's sort of a natural insulator against any one asset class. I think the general consensus is the least hard hit out of this whole thing, as we talked about 4 weeks ago, is probably the residential sector, the multifamily residential sector. But at any rate, again, the mixed-use developments probably help insulate from those dips. And then, you know, we're talking about the opportunity zones being, you know, they're all ground-up redevelopments, or most of them are ground-up redevelopments, at least in this space, and the kind of transactions that I look at. And so when you talk about long-term value creation, that value creation isn't occurring without economic growth. If we talk about this slowdown in the medium or longer term, that's when it starts to impact these. The short-term changes in the economy won't impact those. But the real play in these opportunity zone investments is the gain upon sale. It's the gain upon reinvestment. It's what happens to the economics for over years and years of compounded growth. So 2 years, 4 years down the road, nobody's worried about it because all your money's locked up until December 31, 2026 or longer. And so it's all about that long-term value creation, what happens to NOI. So again, if the economic cycle dictates it's a short blip and then we're back on to where we were before, great. If there's some long-term impact to these asset classes, i.e. rental rates slow in growth for 2 years in multifamily residential, or hospitality rates take a dip, occupancies take a dip by 10% because nobody's traveling for the next 2 years. Those are the kind of economics that are going to start to impact them. It's really about that medium or long-term growth. That's where you have the refinance risk from the construction loan, and that's where you have this end-of-cycle economic risk that perhaps the NOI hasn't grown enough to generate the kind of IRRs that those deals were trying to put together. Not about cash flow. It's all about the long-term growth.
So assuming most of these opportunity zones are development related, I mean, the biggest risk really is whether or not they can continue to obtain the construction financing to kind of execute on what they were putting together in their original development plan. I mean, that's,
yeah.
And then they have that time. I mean, if anyone, I mean, there's probably going to be some change to how we live our life. I'm hoping very little, but I'm sure there will be something. But ultimately, if you're talking 12, 18 months from now, you sure hope that we're far enough getting back to where we need to be at that point, or maybe, like you said, maybe they're planning it perfect to the point where by the time these things are developed and ready to go out and start earning money, you know, we're through this. Maybe we figured out that we need to take these things more serious in the future. I don't know.
Yeah. No, that's the hope. You're right, that we're on the other side. By the time these come to market, we're on the other side, and things have fully recovered.
Okay, we got a few minutes. I'd love to see if anyone has any questions they can throw out there for either Kyla or for Alan. You can just shoot it over. I know a lot of you guys do look at opportunity zone funds, so I don't know if there's anything specific you've seen or a question that you're seeing based upon what's going on right now that you'd want to pose to them. And if you don't, then, you know, we can end it early. Other than that, I'd love an opportunity to see if you guys can stump either one of them.
I love it. If everybody's shy, David, no big deal. They all know how to get a hold of us, of course, as well. We can certainly answer questions anytime, email, phone call, it doesn't matter. We're always happy to answer questions.
Yeah, everyone's got our emails. Just definitely shoot us an email with any questions you have. If you're looking at something and something doesn't look right, you know where to send them. We're here to hopefully make your job a little easier. So I appreciate you all being here, and thanks for participating on these. We're continuing to hopefully have them every other week. So that's about the time it takes to figure out what we're going to have for a topic and the such. So appreciate everything, and you guys all have a good Memorial Day weekend, and we'll talk soon. Thanks again.
Thanks, David. Appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.